This show is brought to you by ERN. Find us online at ernlive.com.
And we're back at Pop Tech Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Dorge, with Jason Masters. Our special guest, Robin Wilton, is joining us here from the UK, and he's been giving us quite an update and quite an earful on internet security and the wide range of the technical implications. Robin, thanks for joining us. Right before the break, we were talking about, you were discussing how the internet really, as we know, has no borders, and some of the difficulties you face is governments trying to kind of rein the internet in with a fence around it, and that's just not really how it goes.
Yeah, that's right, and I think you've probably seen this in the US recently. A court in Europe, the European Court of Justice, recently ruled that the mechanisms for protecting data between Europe and the states, it just ruled they were invalid. It said, we've been allowing the transfer of personal data between the US and the EU on the basis that the privacy protections on either side of the Atlantic are pretty much equivalent. And actually, we as a court have concluded that they're not equivalent, and therefore you have to stop.
Who's got the bigger mess, you or us?
I like to quote Richard Thomas, who used to be the information commissioner for the UK.
Okay.
He said that the US and the Europeans stand on either side of the Atlantic looking at each other with mutual suspicion.
Well, that's kind of been since the Cold War days, hasn't it?
I couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah, I mean, just from everything I've read in history, that it appears, and again, and I'm not trying to take a political stance one way or the other on this, but I think everybody, ever since World War II, we've always kind of raised an eyebrow. And it's a very, it's a scary thing. And I mean, back to taking this back to a personal data level, I mean, with big companies like this getting hacked, with Hillary Clinton getting hacked, I think the thing that surprises me the most is why do people keep sensitive stuff on their personal machines at home? I mean, knowing how easy it is for this to get out. Any insight on that? I mean, is there anything that you see in your day to day that you're just shocked that people, I can't believe this is on somebody's laptop, or I can't believe that this is in somebody's mail server in a corporate office?
Well, I think what you're picking up on there is, again, partly it's a reflection of this fact that you can do a lot of stuff which is, for example, putting your privacy at risk, and yet you can see no obvious damage for it. So I think, again, people are perhaps not guided as they might be if there were obvious bad consequences to stuff that they did. But also, I think when you talk about, is there stuff that I might find on someone's laptop and be amazed that it was on there? I guess the question is, where else are they going to put it?
There you go. Well, on that auxiliary hard drive, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, so what we're talking about there is that people have to, if they want to keep stuff really safe, then they have to take some extra steps to make sure that it's safe. And the path of least resistance is you put things on your laptop, you put them in email, you put them in the cloud, you put them on Facebook. That's the environment that we're surrounded by now. It is far easier to disclose data, to publish it, than it is to keep it secret or to parcel it up and store it somewhere safe. You actually have to make an effort to do that, whereas putting stuff out in the open is essentially the zero path of resistance these days. And I think that's something we can only really change by changing our habits. To say, I know it would be more convenient to stay in contact with my extended family through Facebook, but I just don't like the price of that in privacy terms. So I'm going to do it some other way. Maybe I'm going to email them. Maybe I'm going to actually, heaven knows, pick up a pen and paper and write them a note. But it's that kind of change of habit to accept that sometimes the privacy trade-off isn't worth the convenience that you're getting.
Right, right. I'm amazed. I mean, because of what I do, I go to trade shows all over the world. I talk to people everywhere, and I'm shocked on one level you know, how much attention people pay. You know, they know everything. Hey, I saw that, you know, I saw that car you just bought. Hey, I saw your dog. You know, it's, you know, it's crazy. You know, it's crazy. People, strangers ask you how your dog is, you know.
Which is cool on one level. I mean, if someone comes up to you at a conference and says, hey, I really admire you. I'm so glad we got to meet in person, instead of just seeing your Twitter avatar. That's quite nice. But on the other hand, there are other people and entities consuming exactly the same data for different reasons. Like we said earlier, your data is an economic asset to someone. And so it's not only the people who are happy to see you and make contact. There are other people using that data for different purposes, even though you disclosed it in order to be friendly, in order to stay in contact with your circle of acquaintances. So the fact that you disclosed it in one context doesn't stop someone from profiting from it in another context.
So what would you say for the average person? What's kind of the best way to stay vigilant to make sure this data doesn't, you know, fall into too bad of hands? I mean, is it just, would you just say minimize your profiles as much as possible then?
I think the key is to be aware of the fact that you disclose stuff in a particular context. If that means perhaps separating your life a little bit into compartments, then I think that's worth doing. So one example I always give is if you have a primary credit card, then perhaps it's worth going to your bank and saying, can I open another account with a lower credit limit and a different credit card, which I will use online?
That's what I do. Actually, that's what I do. I have one card that only has a $1,000 limit, and that's the card we buy things with Amazon from. That's the card we shop online with, so that if something bad happens, that's only going to go awry to the tune of $1,000.
Yeah. So take that principle and then apply it to your personal data as well as your cash. Find different channels to talk to different people so that you use perhaps one email address for your work and a different email provider even for your personal stuff. Take the same approach and segment your personal life a little bit more according to the context and the audience that you're talking to.
Well, I think that really makes good sense. Well, this is some fascinating stuff, Robin. Informative, but now I'm just a little bit more paranoid at the end of the day. So, hey, where can our readers find you and find out more about what you're doing?
You can find some of our material on internetsociety.org/footprint.
Okay.
That will take you to some of our stuff about understanding and managing your digital footprint. And you can also get hold of me on Twitter at Future Identity.
Well, Robin, thank you very much for joining us. This has been very informative. We're going to have you back again.
You're welcome. It's been a delight, and it would be a pleasure to come back.
Thank you. I'm your host, Jeff Dorge, here on PopTech Radio with Jason Masters. We've had Robin Wilton here from the Internet Society's Trust and Identity Initiatives Group over in the UK. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.
This show is presented in part by Bridgestone. We're passionate about making tires you can count on to perform when it matters most. We'll be right back.